Hello, I'm Michel Hermagnan. This is number 0386, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
There, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0386. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Jim Bakei, the author of True Fit. He has a different theory on how one goes about finding the right job for them. Step one, take charge of the interview.
You sit down, how do you do, nice to meet you, and you lead off by saying, I'm looking for an opportunity that's going to utilize the following skills that I have and that someone should pay me for if they need these skills. These are the kind of people that I work best with. This is how I resolve conflict, and this is a perfect day. And when you lead with those four slides, it resonates with the interviewer immediately, and they say, that's exactly what we're looking for. We need what you are or have.
Ian Feagan is the man behind Ian's Shoelace site, the most popular website in the entire world dealing with all things shoelaces. How did this start?
It simply happened because I put my Ian knot, the world's fastest shoelace knot, onto what was originally just a simple little private website. Because it sort of went viral, as we would use the terminology nowadays, back then, I started getting emails from all over the world and asking me all sorts of questions in relation to shoelaces. I started putting the answers to it on my website, and yeah, the site just sort of grew as a result.
Chrissy Steed, author of The Kiddypreneur in You, on kids in business. She started her business at the ripe old age of 14.
When I was 14, actually, when I was younger, I attended dance programs and all kind of arts programs, and it became really expensive for my parents. So I started a dance program based off my passion of dance. And my thing was to definitely help other children who weren't able to afford dance lessons to be able to, also participate in the arts and not feel overburdened by the cost.
And, of course, we have lots and lots of Stuff File news and an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0386, was Michel Hermagnan, a faithful Stuff File program listener here in Montreal. Thank you very much, Michelle, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? You know, you don't find many friends like this. According to police in Texas, a man who wanted to raise cash to bail out his female roommate decided to rob a bank while leaving his sick stepdaughter home alone. Odessa police arrested 47-year-old Gregory Wayne Fant after being accused of robbing the Prosperity Bank. And by the way, there's that middle name of Wayne that seems to set off criminal alarm bells everywhere. Also, isn't there a certain amount of hubris to call your financial institution Prosperity Bank? Anyway, according to the police investigation, Fant was taking care of his sick stepdaughter when he decided to rob a bank in order to raise enough cash to bail out his female roommate. He went into the Prosperity Bank and threatened a teller with a gun. He fled from the scene with nearly $10,000 in cash. He then used some of the cash to bail out his female roommate from jail. The roommate was identified as Latrice Hopes, but no good deed goes unpunished because it was Hopes who later called police to say that Fant had robbed the bank. I'm guessing whatever relationship they had is now over. And certain stories seem to come in waves. Recently, we've had a spate of items featuring criminal activity by naked people. Here's the latest. We have an unusual high-speed pursuit in Arizona involving a Maricopa County Sheriff's vehicle stolen by a naked woman. The woman allegedly took officers and deputies on a 75-mile chase with speeds reaching 100 miles an hour at times. It all began in Guyla Bend when the woman walked up to a gas station there. The station's manager said the woman appeared to be in her late 20s or early 30s and appeared calm. Some people outside the station called sheriff's deputies, and one arrived within 2 minutes. Officials with the MCSO said the deputy tried to help the woman. It was at that time that she entered the deputy's vehicle and actually started driving off, said a department spokesperson. Spike strips helped bring the bizarre pursuit to a dramatic end near the town of Elroy. Reminds me of the tagline of a television show from my youth. There are 8 million stories in the Naked City. As a matter of fact, we have one more right now. Another story about a crazy naked person. Authorities have arrested a man they say burglarized a pizza shop in the nude in late November. Baltimore County Police said in a statement that 23-year-old Jonathan K. Newman has been charged with second-degree burglary following a break-in into Slice Pizza. Police say Newman's pants ripped off as he entered the store from a roof vent. Video footage shows the suspect then took off his shirt to cover his face. The store owner told local news that there was no money in the cash register, but the suspect still managed to cause thousands of dollars in damage to the store. So, the stark reality of his stark nakedness is that crime-wise, he came up empty. By the way, his picture is up there on the web somewhere. You can take a look at it with his t-shirt on his head and basically the rest of them out there for the world to see. Yeah, lovely stuff indeed. Anyway, we have one more story in this section of Stuff File News before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. So are you one of those folks who believes that reality TV has gone too far? That we're willing to watch just about anything, and we're only one step away from living in the world of Shirley Jackson's short story, The Lottery? Well, hold on to your seats, because here's the story of what's going on in the former Soviet Union. Russian producers are planning the so far out there ultimate survivor show in the Siberian wilderness for 9 months, where temperatures are as low as 40 degrees below, and that's both Fahrenheit and Celsius, as you may know, with 30 contestants selected after signing liability waivers that protect the show even if someone is raped or murdered. Wow. Police may come and arrest the perpetrators, but the producers are not responsible for intervening. Isn't that nice? Yeah. The show, which is entitled Game 2 Winter, will be telecast live around the clock beginning in July of 2017 via 2,000 cameras placed in a large area full of bears and treacherous forest. Producers told the Siberian Times in December that 60 prospects had already signed up for the last person standing prize, the equivalent of $1.6 million. And the only requirements? That they be 18 and sane. Those are the only requirements. 18 and sane. Tell me, do the producers have to be sane? Oh, and bonus, the production company's advertising lists the dangerous behaviors they allow, including fighting, murder, rape, smoking. Yes, those four things clearly have equal footing on the dangerous activity scale. Oh my, murder and rape. Think of the ratings. Think of the lack of humanity. Wow. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Jim Bakey is the author of True Fit, How to Find the Right Job by Being You. The former president of Wood Gundy is now a human capital expert, and he believes that if you're looking for a job, you should file away that CV and stop networking. Jim joins us on the line right now from Florida. Hi, Jim.
Hello, Anthony. How are you? Thank you for having me.
I'm just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. So the idea of filing that CV and stop networking goes against the grain of what a lot of people have believed over the years. How does this actually work?
Well, I think, just to clarify, the part about the CV, I think the world still has a conventional view of CV. But to me, a CV is a trip itinerary of where you've been. doesn't really tell people who you are. And combined with sort of useless going to visit people and dropping in and, you know, can I come see you? Can I come talk to you? And you really have nothing more than your CV. And the first question somebody always says is, so what do you want to do? And people are stumped at that question, you know. And so what I've created sort of through my own necessity of my own life, but I've created in my coaching practice, is I've created a thing called an infomercial. And you know those nasty little things that you see on television all the time. But the thing I like about infomercials is they're very, very clear. They're binary in how they resonate with you. You either really like what they have to say or you really don't. And so my infomercial starts with, what should I pay you for? That's a $64,000 question. What can you do for me that makes me money or saves me time? And people have difficulty answering that question. So that's the first page, because that's what I'm good at. The second page is, think about all the people you've worked with over a lifetime, and which of those people that you worked with seamlessly? And what are the common characteristics? And I like to say to people, you know, you have a close circle of friends, and you're seamless with all those friends. Doesn't mean all those friends can be seamless with each other, but there's some chemistry that resonates. So look for those people when you're going out interviewing. Thirdly, how do I resolve conflict? Conflict resolution to me is a very valuable tool to understand whether you fit at a place or not. If you're competitive, as in win-lose, and you go to a place that's accommodating and avoiding, they look at you and they say, not a team player, all about themselves. Whereas if you go to a place that's competitive, they go, bring it on, give you a little knuckle, congratulations, you're just like us. And then the last thing is, tell people, what's a perfect day for you? Like, what do you want to be doing, physically doing in a perfect day? Those four key points are what every individual should have about themselves.
Okay, so your book, True Fit, How to Find the Right Job by Being You, it sounds like when you describe what you just said, that it's information that the person looking for a job should know about themselves and be prepared to answer. But do you also, from your point of view, have to train the person who is offering the job to ask the right questions?
Well, you know what? That's a good point, because just to clarify one thing, people that I coach, and what I suggest in this book is you don't wait for the question. You sit down, how do you do, nice to meet you, and you lead off by saying, I'm looking for an opportunity that's going to utilize the following skills that I have and that someone should pay me for if they need these skills. These are the kind of people that I work best with. This is how I resolve conflict, and this is a perfect day. And when you lead with those four slides, and I now have enough data, a body of work of people that I've coached, it resonates with the interviewer immediately, and they say, that's exactly what we're looking for. We need what you are or have, and now we're going to find out. And by the way, we have people like that. There's lots of people like that. Or there, we don't need what you have, or there aren't people like that, or we don't resolve conflict like that. It's so crystal clear, Anthony. It's absolutely amazing to me, not so much to me, but to people when they do it. I coach people to lead with their infomercial. And that gives the interviewer a body of work to question. So if I said, you know, I've hired over 600 people in my career, which is one of the things that I'm really good at, it gives them an opportunity to say, okay, so in what capacity? Tell me about that. So you, as the person being interviewed, control the interview.
Now, you, as I mentioned in the introduction, you were once the president of Wood Gundy. You've changed jobs a couple of times. We're in a society right now where people have, where there are cutbacks. And people who have had long established careers in a particular company may have been cut back and are now in the job market once again. Getting back into the job market, or getting back into the interview process, I should say, is almost like someone who's been divorced or widowed after a long marriage, and they're getting back into the dating game. They're rusty at the concept of it. So what it sounds like what you're describing involves having a lot of confidence in going forward and doing the interview, but that confidence might not be there for somebody who hasn't been through this for a long period of time.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And it's not even for people like that. It's for everybody. This is hard to do, and I say that in my book. And it was hard for me to do, and it's hard for me to do in my practice. I have an infomercial, and it talks about the three things that I'm good at, which is recruiting. I'm good at looking at businesses, figuring out why they don't work, consulting, and coaching and mentoring people. And so, and I know the kind of people I work best with. So there are times when I'm sitting across from a paycheck of someone who is, you know, looking for me to do some work for them, but I can't do that work because I know they're the wrong fit for me. So I have to say no, thank you. And, you know, people would say, well, I'm awfully mighty of you to be able to do that. But I know that if I stay in my target-rich zone, keep looking for people that both need me and want me, and the beauty for those people that are out of work and out of rusty and who are like being divorced, Anthony, is this is an anchor for them, right? This is a real anchor for them. They're not selling. They're educating people about themselves in the interview. And since it's all true, it's what do they say? The police always say, an honest man tells the same story. And if I can get people to tell their story, what they're good at, who they work with, how they resolve, they anchor themselves in confidence from that. The lack of confidence comes in walking into a room and having 20 people or 10 people fire 18 questions at you. Nobody's good at that.
I'm just concerned because I know a lot of times people walk into a job interview situation and it's almost like they're a drowning man hoping that someone throws them a life preserver. And if anyone has the hint of a life preserver, they'll jump at it, you know, because they feel they need to.
Well, because they have nothing else to hold on to.
Yeah.
They have no reference point, right? So, as I say in the book, I don't help people find jobs. I help them find themselves first. And then I help them find the right fit to that job. And I've coached, countless people, probably over 100 people. And I've coached men, women, kids coming out of university, senior people, people out of work, and everything else. And it's hard. It's hard to get people to trust that your infomercial will resonate. But as I say to people, no is a good answer. Someone says, no, I don't want you, and no, I don't need you, that's a good answer. And as long as you keep pitching the infomercial, what'll happen in some cases, someone will say, you know what, Anthony, I don't need what you're doing, but it's so clear to me who you are that I know someone else who does. And I've had that happen on a number of occasions with coaching clients. It's hard. There's no question. I am turning back years of people thinking I have to go sell myself into an interview. Don't sell. Educate them about who you are skill-wise, and educate them about who you are personality-wise, and tell them what a perfect day is for you.
The difference is, though, when your jobs came to an end, you had some pretty high-profile jobs, and I would assume that with some of those high-profile jobs, there was a little bit of a cushion as to any kind of package you might have had when you left that job. Some people who leave jobs don't necessarily have that luxury in that they need something now, and that's where the desperation comes in.
Well, let me tell you about, there's no question, right after I left the high-profile job, but that I had that. But my own desperation occurred when, you know, I'd lost a lot of my money. I was expecting my sixth child. My fourth child was having brain surgery, and I was unhirable. Nobody would hire me, notwithstanding any of the success that I'd had at Wood Gundy, CIBC, or Bank of Montreal. And the reason that nobody would hire me is I kept selling people on why they should hire me, but I never could explain to them what they should pay me for. And once I understood that, in my particular case, I ended up starting my own business because I realized that the skills that I have are valuable to people and are actually valuable to more people. But I was desperate. You know, I had six kids, one with brain surgery, another one on the way, and a depleting bank account. And feeling like, oh my God, I can't get a job. And I couldn't get a job. Nobody would hire me. I even offered my skills to organizations going back 15 years of level where I was at, and I couldn't get a job. So I realized at that time I had to find myself. I had to be able to explain to someone what they should pay me for.
Valuable information. The book is True Fit, How to Find the Right Job by Being You. Valuable information for anybody who's looking for a job. And as I said earlier, I think this is valuable information for people who are in the hiring process. Jim, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure. Have a great day.
Jim Bakiai, author of True Fit, How to Find the Right Job by Being You. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0386, and you'll find links to Jim's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about shoelaces. Yeah, that's right, shoelaces. And we'll also learn how you can get your kid into the business world at a very early age. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and lots more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, The Smarter Way to Listen to Radio. Here's the ultimate in irony. A conservative columnist who often wrote criticisms of gun control for the Portland Press Herald has been accidentally shot and killed by a teenage boy. Maine State Police and Sanford Police are investigating the shooting death of Portland Press Herald columnist M.D. Harmon at his home in Sanford. Harmon worked for Portland, Maine newspapers for over 40 years. In a 2013 column, he railed against proposed gun control legislation, writing, "But the absolute worst part of the bill is that it would require all gun buyers to take a firearm safety course." The unidentified teenage boy and his father had been visiting Harmon in his home when Harmon allowed the teenager to handle one of his guns. The gun went off and killed him. Well, there really isn't anything one can add to that story, is there? So let's move on. Meanwhile, cellular provider Verizon Wireless claimed Robert Abel used 234 gigabytes of mobile data in October. The Grantville, South Carolina 72-year-old says he never goes over 12 gigabytes, the amount on his monthly plan. He tried talking to Verizon and a representative there about the $3,357.96 charge, but he wasn't satisfied with the results. "I told him that I'm done with this phone, and I grabbed my gun and downloaded a round of birdshot into the phone." He also complained to the media, the police, and the Federal Communications Commission. Eventually, Verizon waived the charges. Mr. Abel? Mr. Abel, we can hear you now. And investigators say 38-year-old Vincent Barone was driving in Pinellas County, Florida, when he veered off the roadway and seriously injured two pedestrians who were standing on the sidewalk. Witnesses say Barone then fled the scene, but someone was able to follow him to a nearby convenience store, where they called the police and detained him until deputies arrived. Barone allegedly told the deputies he hit the pedestrians because he was distracted by the game he was playing on his phone as he drove. He was charged with two counts of leaving the scene of a crash involving serious bodily injury. You know, I truly hope there aren't any video games in the correctional facility that he'll be going to. Okay, after Pakistan International Airlines ATR-42 airplane crashed, killing 47 people, the airline was seen taking new steps to help ensure the safety of its next ATR-42 flight from Islamabad. Employees sacrificed a goat. Passengers took pictures and posted tweets of the ritual being performed next to the aircraft, which was about to depart on a domestic flight. In Pakistan, many believe killing a black goat will ward off evil. Good move! Fresh mutton on flight menu, tweeted blogger and columnist Nadeem Farooq Parasha. The flight arrived safely in Multan and then returned to Islamabad. So, who's to say their rituals weren't right? You know, it's a good thing we've gotten past the point when people used to sacrifice virgins. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the owner of a weekly upstate New York newspaper says a man bought hundreds of copies, actually almost 1,000 of them, in an unsuccessful effort to keep people from reading about his drunken driving arrest. State police arrested Joseph Talbot on December 29th in Wayne County and charged him with driving while intoxicated. Police also charged him with refusing to be fingerprinted or photographed. They say he told troopers he didn't want his mugshot in the newspaper. The 12,000 circulation Times of Wayne County says it obtained a mugshot from the county jail. It says it printed the mugshot and a story on New Year's Eve and published them online. Newspaper owner and editor Ron Holdraker says Talbot bought nearly 1,000 newsstand copies at $1.25 each. Again, I remind you that the paper also published the story online. So, what is the result of this moron's actions? Well, not only does everyone in his community know about his arrest, so does the entire free world, because the story has gone viral. You know, I almost made this guy the idiot of the day, because this is moronic activity on a higher calling, but I didn't. That comes later in the program. And by the way, you can also see his mugshot on the Stuff File fan page on Facebook, because, of course, I posted it. Yeah. I posted it. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Back in October, the New York Times mentioned a website that comprehensively covers everything worth knowing and wondering about shoelaces. Ian's Shoelace site shows, discusses, and rates lacing methods, how to mix lace colors, how to tie, basically everything you wanted to know about shoelaces. The Ian behind the site is Ian Fegan. He joins us on the line right now via Skype from Australia. Hi, Ian.
G'day, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for doing this. I checked out the site, and it is very comprehensive. How does someone, first of all, become a shoelace expert? Because you certainly are one.
Yeah, it's a strange thing to aspire to, and it's certainly not something I aspired to. It simply happened because I put my Ian knot, the world's fastest shoelace knot, onto what was originally just a simple little private website that I used to experiment with. And because it sort of went viral, as we would use the terminology nowadays, back then, you know, when someone put something interesting on the internet, I started getting emails from all over the world and asking me all sorts of questions in relation to shoelaces. And I realized that there was a real lack of knowledge there. And rather than answering the same questions over and over, I started putting the answers to it on my website, and yeah, the site just sort of grew as a result.
Okay, well, let's back up a bit. First of all, describe for the audience what the Ian Knot is.
Well, the Ian Knot was my original attempt to make a normal shoelace knot symmetrical. So I figured because it ends up symmetrical, it must be able to be formed symmetrically. So I fiddled around a bit by tying a normal knot and then carefully untying it and seeing how it went together. And in doing so, I realized, hey, look, if you form two loops and sort of push them through each other, it creates the identical knot. And hey, guess what? It's actually faster. And within a very short time, I found that I could do it in a split second instead of, you know, 1 or 2 seconds. And so the Ian Knot was born.
Okay, you know, I have been accused all through my life of being somewhat anal retentive, and I embrace that. But when I hear somebody say, I need to make a shoelace more symmetrical, wow, that is going to some depth, isn't it?
Well, there was actually a practical reason for it, because I found that this actually happened one morning after I broke a shoelace. And, you know, from tying a shoelace over and over, over its lifetime, it gradually wears out. And I found that one end always wore out more than the other end. And the practical person in me figured, well, look, if I could make this shoelace knot more symmetrical, then I would spread the wear more evenly. And in fact, that's what's happened. Besides the fact that it's symmetrical and it has less wear and tear, the fact that you are actually doing much less work to tie the shoelace, I mean, it's literally a zoop, zoop, and it's done. There's much less wear and tear on the shoelace, and I haven't had a shoelace breakage for, you know, 30-odd years.
You know, it's amazing how much sense that last statement really says. I mean, the idea of the wear and tear on shoelaces, and by the way, shoelaces, I've been my experience, shoelaces always break at the most inopportune times. It's always when you have to go somewhere fancy that your shoelace breaks.
Exactly. I mean, they won't really break when you're untying them. They'll break when you're tying them, and that's usually one of the last things you're doing before you're heading out a door somewhere, and well, there you go.
Okay, so this website you've had, it's been up for about 16 years, correct?
Exactly, yeah. Originally, it was just the one page of my Ian Knot, and then I put the other more common shoelace knots on there for comparison. I mean, this was in the years before YouTube even existed, so, you know, nowadays someone inventing something new will just stick it on YouTube and it will spread pretty quickly. But in those days, you know, you put your page on the internet and hope that people found it interesting, and luckily a lot of people did.
Now, you get millions of people looking at your website. At what point did you realize, as you said, this has gone viral, and were you surprised by it?
Well, it surprised me almost immediately that it really went viral. What surprised me more was that people really encouraged me to keep going and adding other bits and pieces to it. And my initial interest was more in the shoelace knots. So I started adding several different shoelace knots that I discovered. You know, I went to libraries and so forth and looked up different ways of tying shoelaces, and just speaking with people and looking up things on the internet, of course. Speaking with family and friends, and you know, I started adding all these shoelace knots, but I soon discovered that people were actually more interested in lacing methods than they were in shoelace knots, because you know most people, a shoelace knot is a traumatic thing to learn as a child, and they're quite happy with the one knot that works for them. But lacing methods offer enormous flexibility, like to simply change the lacing method on your shoe can change its appearance or can change its functionality in quite fundamental ways.
Wow, I never thought of that. You must be the sworn enemy of Velcro and loafers.
Yeah, I'm no real fan of Velcro, although here in Australia we are pretty big on our thongs, as we call them, or flip-flops, as the Americans call them. We do like our thongs because it's quite warm, comfortable weather, and I've just got back from the beach myself, and I'm wearing thongs as we speak. But the Velcro, no, I'm no big fan of it.
By the way, you've just described one of my biggest pet peeves in life, the sound thongs make or flip-flops on concrete or floor surfaces. That to me is one of the most annoying sounds of summer.
Well, flip-flops are great for walking along sand. They don't make that flip-flop sound on sand, but yeah, with a bit of practice, you can actually walk without making the flip-flop sound.
So nowadays, now that this is, again, 16 years you've had this site up online, what is the most popular thing people tend to look toward or ask you over the years on this site?
Probably until I actually added it to my website, one of the most perplexing questions that strike people is, why do my shoelaces come undone? And this is due to, or is invariably due to, people tying a granny knot. Now, a correctly tied shoelace knot should not come undone, but if you have the starting knot and the finishing knot in perfect harmony, then they will they'll keep each other tied. But if they are in discord or tied incorrectly, you'll end up with a knot that is unbalanced and will come undone, and that's called a granny knot. This is one of the most perplexing questions, and over the years that's been addressed on the website. I've had a granny knot page that I've gradually expanded over the years, and I've added a granny knot analyzer and all sorts of resources to ensure that people have all the information at their fingertips to make sure they're tying their shoelaces correctly.
We usually, as you say, learn to tie our shoes at either 3, 4, or 5 years old, somewhere in that time frame. Can you teach an old dog new tricks? I'm just wondering. I've been tying my shoes for the same way all my life. Is it easy to learn a new way to tie your shoes, or is that... Because, I think we tend to tie our shoes literally by rote. We don't even realize we do them when we do them.
Exactly. In fact, most people discover this for themselves when they start teaching a child for the first time, because they realize, I don't even know how to break it down into the separate steps anymore. It's become so second nature for me. They're standing in front of the child and they go, now you do this, and they've done about 3 steps in one go. Take, for example, the tying of the first loop. To actually create a loop involves holding the lace in one hand, grabbing it with the other hand, then using the first hand to sort of grab the middle of the loop, folding it down so that you've got, the loop folded back on itself, and then with the first hand, you sort of let go of the end and grab it in the middle. There's all these separate hand movements just to create a loop, and a child has to actually do this for the first time, and they're going, oh, what do I do? yes, we do things by rote, and learning a new knot can be just as traumatic as it was the first time round.
Were you surprised, because I mentioned in the introduction that there was a story in the New York Times about your website, were you surprised over the years of the media attention you've received?
Indeed. There's various different places like the New York Times and the Washington Post and various prominent papers and so forth have interviewed me over the years to just get a handle on why on earth someone would start a website about shoelaces. Probably because shoelaces have been perceived through the years as one of the most lowly of items. Even in the Bible, there's references to a shoelace as being the most lowly item, and that, someone's not worthy to even tie your shoelaces. That it has always seemed strange to people that anyone would go to the effort of creating a website that contains all this information. But that's really the joy of the world, isn't it? That there's people for every single niche in the world. There's someone there to fill that niche.
Well, I was about to say, people Google stuff all the time for whatever reason, and they expect to find an answer. So thanks to you, when it comes to shoelaces, you have all the answers. Ian, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. It was a pleasure to have a chance to talk to you.
And you're most welcome, and I welcome anyone who has any questions about shoelaces to do exactly what you suggested. Just Google shoelace and you usually find my Ian Shoelace site somewhere on the top of the list, and hopefully I'll have the answers to your questions.
Ian Feagan, the man behind Ian's Shoelace site. It's the number one shoelace site in the entire world. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is number 0386, and you'll find the link to Ian's page. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holden.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. In January of 1776, American patriot Thomas Paine published a pamphlet called Common Sense. It helped spark the American Revolution. This January, as we think about our goals for the coming year, let's revisit this historic document and hear what Paine told his fellow colonists. In his opening paragraph, Paine wrote, and I quote, "A long habit of not thinking a thing wrong gives it a superficial appearance of being right, and raises, at first, a formidable outcry in defense of custom." In today's language, he was saying that it's easy to lose sight of how wrong something is when it becomes an everyday part of one's life. Let's be fair, that's exactly why we've used these segments each week to highlight the negative impact that excessive litigation has on daily life in America. Now, as we start a new year, we're also going to share stories about how excessive government regulation holds America back. It's time to challenge the status quo. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about how to get your kid into business at a very early age. We still do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way. I've got one more Stuff File story I want to share with you, though. But before I get to that, just a moment for a word about Elita Hair Products of Beverly Hills. You know, many hair care products contain harmful ingredients that can damage your hair and your scalp. At Elita Hair, their policy is to use only great natural ingredients without harmful chemicals. All Elita Hair products are made in the U.S. and are not, I repeat, not tested on animals. They're safe, healthy, natural, and luxurious, but not at the usually high salon prices. Listeners to the Stuff File program, you have a special offer. Visit Elita Hair at their website. That's elitahair.com, ElitaHair.com. When you purchase Elita Hair products, use the promo code STUFF10, that's STUPH10, STUFF10, and you'll get a 10% discount. That promo code, once again, STUFF10. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0386, and you'll find the promo code and link near the bottom of the page. That's Elita Hair products of Beverly Hills. Okay, I promised you one more Stuff File news story, did I not? Yes? Yes, I did. Police say a Pennsylvania woman drove into a river to avoid arrest, then ignored officers and continued drinking beer as she floated in the vehicle. The York Daily Record reports police approached the woman near a boat launch to arrest her for fleeing from them earlier. She was wanted for running a stop sign. They say she hit the gas and barreled into the Susquehanna River. They say officers tried to communicate with her, but she just ignored them and drank her beer. A fire department boat brought the woman back to shore. The woman was taken to York Hospital, and police continue to investigate. Her name hasn't been revealed. But I'm sure when her name is released, she'll be getting a call from the brand of beer she was drinking. I mean, think of it. Think of the spokesperson deal she could get for showing such dedication to their product. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our final guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program this week, shall we? For some, it's never too young to get into business. What are the ins and outs of entrepreneurial success for kids online? That's the question we put to Chrissy Steed, the CEO of Kittypreneur Brand, and she's also the author of The Kittypreneur in You. Chrissy joins us on the line from New Jersey. Hi, Chrissy.
Hi, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for doing this and
great.
Being on the program with us. I think there's an entrepreneurial spirit in most kids, whether you start off doing, back in the day, newspaper routes and lemonade stands. But we're living in a different and some might say somewhat more dangerous world. The idea of your kids online doing business is a daunting fact for a lot of people. So how do you get around, first of all, that first fear?
Well, the thing is, parents are highly engaged with any business. They cannot operate a business without proper adult supervision as well as signing legal documents. So parents are, we highly encourage parents to be engaged with their children as they start their entrepreneurial efforts.
Now, you started your journey, I believe, as a 14-year-old, is that correct?
I was 14 years old. I actually started my own dance program for inner-city youth. And like stated before, my parents were there the entire step, you know, the entire way. They helped me navigate through the system and kind of, you know, understand business and as well as deal with you know, other adults and things of that nature.
Well, let's back up a little bit. Tell us a little bit about how you got into that in the first place. It sounds like it's something you were passionate about and really wanted to do. Am I correct in that assessment?
Absolutely. When I was 14, actually, when I was younger, I attended dance programs and all kind of arts programs, and it became really expensive for my parents. So I started a dance program based off my passion of dance. And my thing was to definitely help other children who weren't able to afford dance lessons to be able to, you know, also participate in the arts and not feel overburdened by the cost.
Okay, so you filled a need because you saw a need and it was something that was close to your heart. Sorry?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was close to...
I was definitely passionate about it.
Yeah, it was something that was close to your heart. Now, as somebody who has a business helping other children start their business, I would assume you also have to be a little aware of the fact... that just like, for instance, in the entertainment business, there are stage moms and stage dads. You have to understand whether this is something the kid really wants or their parents want more. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, you have to really know what your kid's passions are because the one thing about business, which is really neat, is that even if the children aren't, per se, you know, interested in starting their own businesses through the Kiddiepreneurship program, they learn skills that are like life skills that they can take with them as adults, whether it's, you know, negotiating, budgeting, learning how to speak to people, so just building their self-confidence. So even if they decide, this isn't for me, they definitely walk away with skills that they can use as adults.
Okay, tell us about the program and how it got started.
So the Kiddiepreneur in You brand was actually founded to help children understand the aspects of business. My daughter is 8 years old, and she has her own business, and she's pitched to QVC and all over to different retailers. And it's important for children to understand the fact that, you know, if you have an idea, and it also keeps them out of trouble, keeps them active, they're not from the computers all day, you know, so it really helps build their creativity. The reason why we started it was to help children and parents understand that, you know, just because they're pint-sized doesn't mean that they can't start their own businesses and do things for themselves. So we definitely want to push independence at an early age.
What is it that your daughter was starting to do at 8 years old?
Well, she actually had a passion for fashion. And at three, she started making these tutus and helping out with the colors, the swatches. And then as she got older, you know, she kind of outgrew the tutu phase. And she said, Mom, I want to start my own sneaker line. So we actually implemented a plan to start her sneaker line. So she designs sneakers, she draws out how she wants them to look, and then we get them manufactured.
Wow.
And it's AMET by Amaya. So.
That's amazing. So you wrote the book, as I said earlier, the Kiddiepreneur in You. What made you want to write this book? I mean, you were doing this yourself. You were doing this with your daughter. Were other parents coming to you and saying, gee, you did so well or your child's doing so well. How do I do that? How did it get started for you writing the book?
Right. So, you know, with the rise of social media, you know, they see the things that my daughter is doing. And I get tons of inboxes of, you know, well, how did you get started, and can you give me tips, and can you consult me? So it was just the easiest way to kind of connect with it, as many people as possible. Writing a book that was simplistic enough for an 8-year-old to understand, as well as a high schooler. So the book is really geared towards elementary through high school students, and it helps the parents navigate through what's needed to start a business.
In a business, one of the most important things, of course, is growth. It's great to have a great idea, but one must expand on that. How do you expand on children's ideas for new products and the like?
Well, the good thing about the Kiddiepreneur brand is that we actually have programs at the end of each workshop. So parents will go through workshops, or they actually learn on their own. They're invited to come out to the Celebrity Entertainment Business Awards, which is part of Kiddiepreneur Weekend. And we allow for the children to be vendors and to interact with the public and actually talk about their products, and if their products are ready to be sold, they can sell their products. And we give them different outlets to continue to grow.
Now,
so it's not just a book, but it's a whole entity.
You mentioned an event. It's coming up later on this year, right? Tell us about that.
Yes. So the Celebrity Entertainment Business Awards honors celebrity entrepreneurs, kiddiepreneurs who are kids, as well as small businesses and throughout the nation. So we have people coming from all over to be awarded, to be honored, to network. And then we also have a vendor's marketplace where we allow our entrepreneurs, as well as our kiddiepreneurs, to interact with the audiences and the public and sell their products. So it's a great event that we do every year in June.
Wow. Is it also a great opportunity for the kids to get together, you know, like-minded children, to sort of brainstorm ideas with each other? Because I'm sure there's a lot of kids who are involved in such enterprises, and maybe somehow their parents or themselves even think that, well, they're the only kind of kid doing this kind of thing, but clearly there are a lot of them.
Oh, absolutely. Our last event, we had a child or two who were, they were actually filmmakers. So they have their own film business, and they make movies, and they pitch it out, and they were able to connect. So, I mean, it's such a great opportunity for kids to network together, for parents to understand the ins and outs, because, like I said, we have children coming from the West Coast, and we're located on the East Coast of the United States. So, I mean, just to kind of bridge that gap, and they can explore each other's ideas, is something that's great about the entrepreneurship program.
And just because a child is entrepreneurial doesn't mean he or she comes from an entrepreneurial background. Their parents can be...
Absolutely not.
Sorry, go ahead.
Most parents have no idea. Most of them are not business owners. You know, they're, you know, regular, you know, you have teachers, you have lawyers, you have some who are stay-at-home moms. So, I mean, you don't have to be an expert in the entrepreneur business in order to be an entrepreneur. You just have to have a passion and a love and understand that there will be failures and be able to pick back up and be persistent and just keep going with it.
The website is kiddiepreneur.com. And again, that event coming up, you say it's in June?
Yes, it's June 9th through the 11th in New Jersey. And all the information is up on the website.
Do you have people coming to your website and taking part in your workshops and reading your book who are not in the United States?
I've had some inquiries, actually, via email from folks who were really, interested, actually in Canada, who were interested in the Kiddiepreneur program and wanted to implement it in their states and countries. So that's something that I'm looking forward to implementing soon.
And people, again, can go into your website and find out more information. Chrissy, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us. Best of luck to you, and belated Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year. Take care.
Chrissy Steed, CEO of the Kiddiepreneur brand and the author of The Kiddiepreneur in You. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0386, and you'll find links to Chrissy's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
A Authorities say a man stole tools from his workplace at an auto repair shop and then accidentally called his boss as he tried to sell them. Citing an arrest report, the Times West Virginian says the owner of the repair shop in the community of Millersville told deputies that one of his employees recently called him about tools he was selling. The owner said the employee immediately hung up after he realized who he had called. Deputies say they recovered the stolen tools after they obtained a warrant to search the vehicle and home of the worker, identified as 37-year-old Sean Nelson Ferner of Fairmont. Ferner is charged with felony, breaking and entering, as well as conspiracy to commit a felony. Now, why, oh why, would you rob your boss and then not realize you're phoning him to sell or fence the stolen items? Well, one reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0386. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0386. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, God. I always screw it up.